Hey, you want to spice things up in the bedroom and boost your sexual performance and do it naturally without nasty prescription drugs? You gotta check out this stuff, Joy Mode. It's a powder. You put it in water, or if you're like me and you're a savage, you can dry powder into your mouth. Contains clinically supported doses of L-citrulline, arginine, yohimbine, and vitamin C. So after taking this stuff called their Sexual Performance Booster, again by Joy Mode, your blood levels of arginine and yohimbine increase, and that directly promotes nitric oxide production, penile tissue relaxation, and increased drive. Well, the antioxidant action of vitamin C protects the nitric oxide from oxidative degradation, which then enhances the blood flow promoting activity of the nitric oxide. They thought of everything. They're super smart over at Joy Mode, and collectively these effects enhance sex drive and blood flow naturally to the penis or to the clitoris. My wife takes it too. It's amazing. You get better orgasms, better blood flow. You can kiss nasty prescription medications goodbye and have natural guilt-free energy for boosting your sexual performance. You can get 20% off your first order from Joy Mode. How? Go to usejoymode.com/greenfield. That's usejoymode.com/greenfield. J-O-Y. Usejoymode.com/greenfield. They'll give you 20% off your first order. I get laughed at, maybe because it's a little bit woo-woo, esoteric, invisible, whatever, but I use quantum energy. I pray over my food when I eat. I try and emanate positive emotions and feelings towards people. I do like little breath work and Tibetan longevity exercise moves to charge up my body with invisible energy. And yes, I even blast my home and my body with certain quantum energy products like necklaces and little boxes that I can use to charge up food. And I get this all from this company called Lila Q. Now, I realize that some quantum energy stuff is not provable by science, but Lila does have third-party studies revealing a remarkable 20 to 30% increase in ATP production, a vital process for cells. Quantum energy has over 59 studies already done and counting. These are randomized double-blind studies these folks are doing for blood quality and HRV optimization. I can't explain it, okay? I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I can explain how quantum energy would increase blood energy or blood quality. Could be placebo. I don't know, but all I can tell you is I wear their necklace. I use their products. I blast my home with their energy. And it's called Lila Q. I've got a podcast with them, a few, if you want to take a deeper dive. But you just go to the website. Check it out. It's kind of fun to surf around. And you know what? If anything, you're going to have some cool-looking conversation products at your house and hanging around your neck. I love them. Lila Q, LEELAQ.com. Use code BEN10 for 10% off. LEELAQ.com. Use code BEN10 for 10% off. Last night, I got my shipment in. That's right. Paleo Valley sent me their fermented meat sticks, which are amazing. They're these beef sticks. I gave a few to some of my friends already, which they love. I actually interviewed Stephen Gundry on my podcast, and he talked about how when you look at a lot of these blue zones, the ones that are the highest ranking in terms of longevity eat meat, but the meat that they eat is actually fermented. And that's exactly what they've done with Paleo Valley. They've actually taken really good grass-fed, grass-finished beef. They've fermented, which naturally introduces gut-friendly probiotics, but more importantly, breaks down a lot of the sugars that would normally cause meat to be harmful, concentrates the vitamins, makes it more digestible, and they have fantastic flavors. They got the original. They've got one that's like a summer sausage. They have a garlic sausage. They have a teriyaki. It's probably my favorite. And you can now get your hands on fermented beef sticks that basically blow that Slim Jim beef jerky out of the water. So check out paleovalley.com/Ben. That's paleovalley.com/Ben to try out these beef sticks and get 15% off your order. Not just beef sticks, fermented beef sticks.
Welcome to the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. We provide you with everything you need to know for total performance, fat loss, recovery, digestion, sleep, brain, and hormone optimization. So whether you're an Ironman triathlete or you just want to shed a few pounds, get ready for non-run-of-the-mill cutting-edge content from BenGreenfieldFitness.com.
Hey, folks, it's Ben Greenfield. And the topic of vaccinations is not only a controversial one, but it's also something that has come up on the podcast a few times. And I've been careful not to delve too deeply into the issue because I know that it's something that is controversial. And frankly, one of the reasons I've avoided it is because it gets people riled up. And it seems like whenever I mention vaccinations on the show, I get emails or comments on both sides of the equation. Well, today I decided to bring on someone who can speak in pretty good depth to the science behind vaccinations so that she can answer some of the questions that come up about vaccinations and dispel some of the myths that are out there. My guest today is Stephanie Seneff, and Stephanie is actually a senior research scientist at the MIT Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory. She's published over 170 different reference articles on the subjects of everything from biology and computation to gene predictions. She's got a huge background in science, and a lot of her research interests are in biology, concentrating mainly on the relationship between nutrition and health. So just in the past few years, she's written over a dozen papers in a bunch of different medical and health-related journals on things like modern-day diseases like Alzheimer's and autism, to drug side effects, to the impact of nutritional deficiencies and environmental toxins on human health. And she also has a little bit of a background in terms of researching some of the specific ingredients in vaccines and the concept of vaccinations in general. So we're going to be delving into that in today's call. So Stephanie, thanks for coming on.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Now, my question is how somebody who was a senior research scientist at the MIT Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory came to be interested in something like vaccines. What exactly makes you qualified to talk about vaccines, and how'd you get interested in this in the first place?
I got interested in vaccines several decades ago, actually, when I was a young mother of a 3-year-old child, and I had a friend who also had a small child, and her child was vaccinated with the DTaP vaccine, DTP at that time, DTP vaccine, DPT, diphtheria, pertussis, and tetanus vaccine. And he ran a high fever. A week later, he had seizures. And then, of course, they assured her the vaccine had nothing to do with it. Don't worry about it. And he did develop, he developed a severe case of autism. So I was exposed to autism early on in that, at a time when it was very rare. And so I was always kind of looking at autism. And I watched as the rates were going up. You know, since 1975, CDC kept coming up with new numbers. If you put those numbers on a plot from 75 to 2014, you'll easily see that it's exponential growth. I mean, they keep on saying, oh, yeah, we're just diagnosing it more. They don't want to worry about it. They're doing all this. Most of the spending is on genetics. They keep saying, oh, it's a genetic problem. It's clearly an environmental problem. And, of course, there's all these mothers who have autistic kids who are absolutely convinced that, you know, my child was fine. They had, you know, multiple vaccines came in and, you know, maybe it's the same kind of thing, ran a high fever. Then their speech started degrading and then they sort of, reverted back into autism. If it's genetic, you know, it doesn't work that way. It's clearly something fishy going on. And, of course, you know, vaccines have been the population has been misled into thinking that vaccines are absolutely necessary and that without them we would just all be dying of smallpox. I mean, it's just not true, you know? We don't it's not a natural thing to be getting all these shots in order to protect yourself from disease. That's not the way nature is supposed to make it happen. And you are paying a huge price for these vaccines because there's a lot of stuff in there that's going directly into the blood that's very toxic. And so it's very naive to say, oh, yeah, they're harmless. What could they do? You know, it's very clear that they do harm. And I have looked extensively at the VAERS database. And as a computer scientist, I can analyze things in very interesting ways. And I'm finding all kinds of amazing things out of the VAERS database. That's the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, which is put out by the CDC. I mean, I'm very thankful that the CDC offers these databases, and they're online. Anybody can download them. So lots of people could be doing what I'm doing, you know. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot to be found in that database that has not yet been reported. I'm absolutely is to that.
My question for you is you mentioned a little bit ago that a lot of these things like measles and mumps, and I know, you know, whooping cough is another thing that has been vaccinated against, that a lot of these we're naturally supposed to be able to take care of. But isn't it a fact that diseases like polio and measles and mumps and rubella have kind of been on their way out since vaccinations were introduced, you know, back in, the exact year that vaccinations were introduced. But like up until that point, weren't there like hundreds of thousands of people dying from things like smallpox?
Absolutely. Well, so it's all very complicated because a lot of it actually has to do with the toxic chemicals in the environment. Suzanne Humphreys, I mean, if you don't know Suzanne Humphreys, you need to read her book. She's got videos online. She's awesome. She's an MD. And she basically quit her hospital, as far as I understand it from her video. She quit her job at the hospital because they refused to listen to her when she said, we should not be giving these elderly people flu vaccines when they enter the hospital because it's killing them. And she was seeing that. You know, they'd come and get the flu vaccine and go downhill. And, I mean, flu vaccine is one that is just ridiculous, in my opinion. We have this, and right now we have a flu epidemic. Now, no one says, well, you know, here we have been the last few years harassing people to get your flu shot. I see it all the time. You know, you go to the local, you know, drugstore, and there it is. Get your, you know, sometimes free flu shots offered. They're like determined to make sure the entire population gets a flu shot every year. The flu vaccine contains glutamate, and it also often contains mercury. And these are both very toxic, especially when they're working synergistically with other toxic chemicals in the environment. So it's very unsafe to get a flu vaccine. And the thing is, it's not even protecting you from the flu because it only protects from, you know, a subset of the different flu strains, first of all. So this means that this will be opportunistic for other viruses to grow. So all you're doing is just pushing it around. So instead of this virus, you get this other virus. There's these syncytial viruses that give you something that looks just like the flu. They're not going to be protected from them at all by the flu vaccine. So all that's going to happen is you'll just get something else. If you are sick and if your immune system is weak, you're going to get the flu. And that's what we're seeing. And we're weakening the immune systems of the entire population in part by giving them flu vaccines. I mean, I have never had a flu vaccine, and I can't remember the last time I had the flu.
I want to ask you, and I want to get into some of those ingredients that you mentioned that were in the flu vaccine that I know are in some other vaccinations. But back to this whole idea of smallpox eradications, measles, mumps going down in the advent of the era of vaccination, et cetera. Are you implying that that history is not exactly true, that it's a different story?
Can you explain? And this is why you need to read Suzanne Humphrey's book. And there's available online. You can look at the plots. Very, very interesting. Because
I'll certainly link to that book in the show notes for people who are listening in. And by the way, if you are listening in, just go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/vaccine. That's bengreenfieldfitness.com/vaccine if you want the show notes. But give us the overview. Why is that? Why is history different?
Polio is very interesting because when you look at the polio epidemic with all the people, you know, you have all the pictures of the kids with the braces and, you know, they're, mm-hmm. they're crippled and all this, and you think, oh my God, it's such a horrible virus. Her opinion, and it's my opinion as well, is that the crippling aspect of polio was not actually caused by the virus. It was caused by the chemical that they were exposed to, which was DDT. And actually, when you look at the use of DDT and the time trends of that usage, and you plot that against the polio epidemic, they line up. They line
up. You
mean
the use of DDT, like as a mosquito repellent?
Absolutely. And DDT got banned, you know, about the same time as polio suddenly was no longer a problem. And of course, also at the same time, the polio vaccine was introduced. The vaccines are getting a windfall. You know, it's like, oh, the vaccine solved the problem, but it isn't true. And they actually solved two problems with one fell swoop. They convinced everybody that polio vaccine is awesome, and they didn't get people distracted to looking at the problems with DDT. So they solved for the chemical industries. It's a wonderful boon, you know. People are now convinced that vaccines walk on water, and they're not realizing that DDT is causing things like paralysis.
Mm. So what you're saying is that. When we're looking at a lot of these issues like smallpox, measles, mumps, rubella, even though they are down after the advent of vaccinations, are you saying that the reason that they were there in the first place was not necessarily due to human beings' inherent propensity to get those diseases, but due to environmental toxins?
I'm not. Actually, I have a very different take. I actually believe that measles, mumps, and rubella are childhood diseases, you know, a rite of passage,
okay.
that we should allow our children to get these diseases, and in fact, that getting these diseases will make their immune system strong. And this is part of the point. So, you know, you're
so I mean, a lot of people would be shocked to hear that a kid is supposed to get MMR. Do kids not die if they get MMR or have pretty serious side effects?
I'm learning some very interesting things about viruses, and I can specifically talk about flu, but more generally, the flu virus is extremely interesting, and I've studied it and what it does. And actually, it goes into muscle cells. I mean, you get muscle aches and pains, you know, because you're infected. It extracts sulfate from the muscle cells and delivers it to the immune system. So the immune cells eat the flu virus and gather the sulfate that's being delivered to them by the virus. It's actually a sulfate transport system. And when you have a severe sulfate deficiency, you're going to be vulnerable to flu. And the reason is because your blood desperately needs sulfate and the flu virus can solve the problem. So if you keep getting flu vaccines, you don't get the flu, your problem gets worse and worse. And eventually you get such a terrible flu that it kills you because you can't handle the load, you know, of the disruption of your biology during the process of this sulfate delivery mechanism. So basically, I believe that infections by viruses are a mechanism to transport important nutrients that are otherwise difficult to transport. And in many cases, they're difficult because of toxic chemicals in the environment that are disrupting your own natural system of transport. And that is certainly true for sulfate.
So when people get, let's say a child gets measles, mumps, and rubella, are you saying that they would be less susceptible later on in life to come down with something like the flu?
I am exactly saying that. I am exactly saying that.
So it's almost like a protective mechanism.
Children get these diseases as a way to improve their biology, make them stronger, make their immune system stronger, because it's delivering sulfate to the immune cells. And the immune cells need sulfate in order to be able to metabolize the viruses and the bacteria. So when the immune cells don't have enough sulfate, they can't digest bugs. You know, they can't digest bacteria. And so they have to just let the bacteria grow, and you get something like sepsis, you know? You get sepsis because your immune system doesn't have enough sulfate.
Okay, so how about this whole thing? And I know you mentioned some ingredients a little while back as far as the flu and stuff, and I do want to delve into those ingredients. But before we do, I want to talk about this whole autism thing, because there was this idea going around for a while, still is, that vaccines cause autism. And what I've read is that it was originated by this guy named Andrew Wakefield, who published some paper in the English medical journal, The Lancet, that claimed this link between autism and MMR, measles, mumps, and rubella.
Right.
And then it turned out, and this is what was reported, that he fudged the data and that he did a bunch of other shady stuff, like paid kids for blood samples at his son's birthday party and like had a bunch of conflicts of interest. And basically the whole thing sounds like it was kind of a scam. What's your take on this and the link between vaccines and autism?
First of all, I think it was necessary for the industry to tear him to shreds in order to rescue the vaccine. And they understood that his paper was a threat. I'll tell you, he wrote a later paper, which of course was published in an obscure journal, like in 2003, I think, or 2004. And I was researching the VARS database, and I wrote a paper, and I was figuring out all this stuff about the gut dysbiosis and the gut-brain axis and the encephalopathy, and I was figuring all that out from the VARS database and the stuff I was seeing. I had my paper almost finished, and then I came across his paper, and I was blown away, because he was saying exactly the same thing in 2004 that I was saying, like, in 2012. And I felt, like, really frustrated that I had to rediscover it, because I didn't find his paper because it was so obscure, you know? He's been practically banished from the literature. He's a genius, and he understood what was going on with autism before anybody else did, and this whole notion of the gut-brain connection, because he's right on about the gut. He talks about the dysbiosis of the gut and the leaky gut and then the toxins getting into the brain. That is exactly what's going on today. And the vaccines are enabling that to be much worse than it would otherwise be, and in particular MMR. MMR is very interesting. So I looked at VARS, and I knew about his Lancet paper, and I was puzzled by it, because MMR does not contain aluminum, does not contain mercury. And everyone's saying, and I know lots of people are saying mercury, and mercury is very toxic, and they're absolutely right. Mercury is a problem in the vaccines. But since MMR doesn't contain it, you know, you think, well, how can it be? And the other thing is aluminum, and MMR doesn't contain that either. So I was really puzzled. I looked at VARS, and I indeed saw that MMR, autism is linked to MMR in the VARS database. And interestingly, from. If you look at the MMR data in VARS before 2002, and you look at the data after 2002, as two different data sets, and you can prepare an age-matched distribution from both sets. So you've got all these kids getting MMR over the same count at each age, before and after 2002, and you look at the side effects, at the reactions that are showing up. The VARS database lists all the different things that kids are, that they're experiencing, and you find something really, really interesting, which is that the one symptom that shows up more often before 2002 is joint pain. And then there's a whole bunch of symptoms that show up more often after 2002, and a lot of them are related to the brain, things like coma, seizures, death, all kinds of, and autism. Autism is showing up more often after 2002 than before, statistically significantly more often. So you say, well, what's going on? It's the same vaccine, it's the same age distribution. Why is it more toxic to the brain after 2002? I mean, I was really puzzled, and I think I figured it out, and I think the answer is glutamate.
Glutamate?
And glutamate is, in fact, glutamate. Glutamate is in the MMR vaccine because it's a live virus that's grown on gelatin, and gelatin, 10% of gelatin is glutamate. Okay. So there's a lot of glutamate in the gelatin.
Just a second. Just to clarify here, gelatin is something a lot of people take for health. Like I make bone broth, and that's gelatin that's in the bone broth, and you can get it in like supplemental food. Does that have glyphosate in it too?
It has glutamate, yeah, but the thing is it goes through the gut, and the gut bacteria convert it to glutamine, which is non-toxic. Glutamate is a neurotoxin, and ordinarily your gut microbes will make sure. They're doing all kinds of things for you. I mean, things that go through the gut. The gut microbes are like rescuing you from all the dangers of all the stuff you're eating a lot. They won't let the aluminum in. I mean, they're working properly. Of course, they're not working properly. That's because of the glyphosate. Glyphosate is the active ingredient in Roundup, which is a pervasive herbicide that's all over the planet. And it is a major contributor to the vaccine problem today. It's the reason why all these things are more toxic today than they used to be in the vaccines, because of the glyphosate.
So this glyphosate, what exactly does it do that would potentially cause it to cause something like autism?
Well, it does a lot of things that cause autism, and I've written extensively about them. And it does these things in concert with the vaccines. It works synergistically with aluminum, and it works synergistically with glutamate to cause harm to the brain. And the glutamate story is very simple. And in fact, the glutamate that's in the gelatin that you're eating will become more toxic if you've got sufficient glyphosate in your gut to disrupt the bacteria's ability to detoxify the glutamate. And this is the problem that's happening.
If I'm not getting a vaccine, how else would I have glyphosate in my gut?
By eating food. All the food contains glyphosate. A lot of the food. I mean, you'd have to eat strictly organic. And even organic food contains glyphosate. It's amazing. Because they can't use it.
You mean the glyphosate that's just getting into our food from like Roundup Ready?
Absolutely. We've got these Roundup Ready crops, the corn, the soy, the canola, the sugar beets. They're all Roundup Ready, which means that you spray Roundup on them and they don't die. They're like the only plants that don't die when they're exposed to glyphosate because it's a universal killer of plants.
And is there a list anywhere of foods that contain, like, if somebody were listening in right now and they were like, holy cow, well, maybe I won't get like a flu vaccine because of the glyphosate in that, but what if they just wanted to figure out what kind of foods they might have in the grocery store or in their pantry that might have glyphosate in them? Is there a list anywhere?
There is. And in fact, Anthony Sampson and I published a paper. We published multiple papers. We have a third one. We have two that we've published, and we're publishing a third one, which has just been accepted, on glyphosate. And the first one includes a list of which is taken out of that. You can get it on the web, but it's hard to find from the U.S. government regulatory agency, which lists the amount of glyphosate that's allowed in the various food crops in parts per million. So they have a list of it's not supposed to be above that number. The way they get that number is by, and they do very little measuring, by the way, of glyphosate, which I find shocking because it's by far the most used herbicide on the planet. The belief is that it's non-toxic. Monsanto has really promoted that concept that it's non-toxic to humans. It's a wonderful herbicide because it doesn't hurt us, and it is simply not true. I'm absolutely certain that it's not true, and there are many papers that show that it's not true. So we're naively using this. Of course, we can go to the hardware store and pick up some to kill our weeds in our yard, too, and we'll probably use it carelessly because we don't realize it's so toxic. That's going to cause trouble, too. But the food, I mean, it's all over the food, and certain foods are worse than others. I won't touch anything that isn't organic if it's corn, soy. I mean, I eat all organic, but if I were being a little bit more sloppy about it, the first things I would get rid of are the corn, soy, canola, sugar beets, which are all Roundup Ready, plus the wheat and sugar cane, which are sprayed with Roundup right before the harvest in order to kill the crop. they're bound to be contain glyphosate as well. So you can see upper limit.
Corn, soy, canola, and sugar. So even if somebody's eating like gluten free and but they're going out and getting like organic corn tortilla tacos or something like that, like
organic.
They can still have some
organic.
Even if they're organic, that doesn't mean they're non-GMO.
Organic will not be Roundup ready.
Yeah.
Organic.
That's one thing I realized. We used to have Taco Tuesdays at our house, and for a while we were patting ourselves on the back that we were doing organic corn, and then I started to look at the tortillas we were using and realized that just because they were like these nice organic corn tortillas, that didn't mean that they weren't genetically modified corn.
No, it does. It does mean that. Organic is not allowed to, it can only allow something like 5%. So there could be a little bit of GMO, but it's mostly non-GMO.
So if
and
it's
they can't
certified organic corn, then you're okay.
You're much better. The thing is that organic even still has glyphosate in it. People have measured it, and it's not because they're putting Roundup on it. It's because there's glyphosate all over the place. It's mm-hmm. in the waters, in the soil. I mean, they have to have their soil checked to make sure that it's healthy before they can even be certified as organic. But it's still, it's in the waters, in the air. I mean, you can't avoid it blowing in from the neighbor. I mean, it's just really amazing. The stuff is everywhere. But you're going to get significantly less exposure by eating organic.
Mercury and aluminum then aren't really the problem when it comes to MMR vaccines. You're saying that glyphosate is the bigger issue.
Glutamate working synergistically with glyphosate. And this is because glyphosate chelates manganese, and manganese is essential to detoxify glutamate. Glutamate is converted mm-hmm. to glutamine, as I said, by the gut microbes. That's how they actually fixate nitrogen. It's extremely important, this conversion of glutamate to glutamine, picks up a nitrogen atom. And, so you're kind of converting nitrates into proteins, which then becomes useful to the whole body. That process is disrupted by glyphosate, and this has huge consequences, but one of the consequences is that glutamate becomes toxic to the brain. Glyphosate also causes a leaky brain, so you're allowing the aluminum to get into the brain, which is why it's showing up as brain symptoms after 2002 compared to joint symptoms before 2002. These are all known symptoms of MSG intolerance, so people who are intolerant to MSG get exactly the same symptoms as the symptoms that are showing up in contrast between the before 2002, after 2002 VARS database, MMR. So, I mean, it's really a good story. I feel like I've really solved this mystery, and that MMR is causative in autism because it allows glutamate to get into the brain, and glutamate is a known neurotoxin. In the brain, actually, glutamate is also converted to glutamine in order to detoxify it. So the brain, glutamate is a neuroexcitatory. It's actually a neurotransmitter. I mean, it's very important thing. But it's why
you get a fuzzy head when you walk out of Chinese restaurants, right?
Yeah, right. The MSG. I mean, that's the thing. MSG is very is free glutamate, and especially if you can't metabolize it to glutamine, you're going to be in trouble. And I mean, I know someone actually who was came to visit us at MIT. We had a Chinese dinner, and she had to be rushed off to the hospital because of a reaction to MSG.
Wow.
And so some people are very sensitive, and those are the ones who are going to get clobbered by the MMR vaccine.
And it's likely that people
and there's
who
going
are,
to be more and more are, of them you, because of the presence of glyphosate everywhere in the food, the water, the air.
The people that are more sensitive to MSG, is it likely that they've also been exposed to more glyphosate than someone that is less sensitive?
I'm guessing that. Now, of course, there's always a genetic component, but yes, I would suspect that would be the
Interesting.
Case.
Interesting. Okay, so there's another ingredient that I've seen talked about quite a bit when it comes to vaccines, and that's thimerosal, one of the preservatives that's in vaccines. And I know a lot of people say that is not favorable because it has mercury in it. But I've seen a couple different thoughts out there on mercury. And what I've read is that the mercury in thimerosal is a form of mercury called ethyl mercury, and that gets flushed out of the body, unlike methyl mercury, which would be like the bad form of mercury. What's the deal with thimerosal? Is it something that we don't need to worry about because the form of mercury is not damaging?
That's not the case, because when you are injecting it like that, you're getting all of it into the body, whereas ordinarily if you have a healthy gut, it doesn't get through. So because of the mode.
So you're saying
liver,
like – what about like – can we use fish as an example? Like if I eat fish and it has mercury in it, it's going to be metabolized much differently by my body compared to like injecting that mercury straight into the bloodstream. Is that what you're saying?
I am absolutely saying that. The same thing goes for aluminum. And the aluminum – so the interesting thing about mercury, and I read about all that, they had that whole flurry of activity around the year 2000 – and I've looked again at VARS. I looked very carefully at it, at what's going on there. It's extremely interesting. And you know, they claimed that they took the mercury out. They basically changed the formulation of the vaccine and that it was much less mercury after 2000. And then they said, oh, look, the autism rate is still going up, you know, despite this. So clearly it's not the mercury. And that end of discussion. This was a story that was told. I don't know if you remember that, but that was around 2000. Sounds beautiful. Okay, fine. Don't worry about mercury anymore. But the problem is it's not true because what they did, well, first of all, glyphosate was going up alarmingly at that time because they had introduced these GMO Roundup Ready crops and they were growing more and more of them every year right during that period. And glyphosate causes autism. So you're seeing that against as a backdrop against which you're removing this mercury. And so, and then the other thing is they introduced more aluminum into the vaccines. They started introducing more vaccines that contained aluminum simultaneously with the withdrawal of the mercury. Now, I don't know if they did this intentionally to stack the deck so you wouldn't see the mercury toxicity or whether it was just an accident and they didn't realize what they were doing, but it looks very suspicious to me that they could easily hide the toxicity of mercury through these tricks of producing, of introducing these other things that are going to make autism go up, you know?
Hmm. Interesting.
And in fact, when you look at VARS, and I've looked at the autism, let me see if I can get this right, I'm trying to picture my graph, there's a sharp rise in the amount of aluminum in the VARS, if you just accumulate the aluminum in the actual vaccines that are where the accidents, where the reactions are reported, you know, in the VARS database, you just get the total aluminum burden.
Now, what are you saying? The VARS database?
VAERS, Vaccine Event Adverse Event Reporting System, an
okay,
awesome
gotcha.
Database that I have really gotten a lot of information out of it. There's issues with it, of course, because mothers can issue reports, so it's not all from medical documents, and sometimes there are duplications, so there's issues, and people often just say, well, you have to dismiss VARS because of these issues, but you can find all kinds of interesting things in there that make sense. You know, there's noise because of all that, but it still doesn't deny that there's a signal, and the signal is very strong about the increased toxicity of aluminum and glutamate-containing vaccines after, in the later years compared to the early years. And the difference is that there's much more glyphosate now than there was then. And the glyphosate is making the aluminum and the glutamate, and probably the mercury is, as well, by the way, much more toxic than they would otherwise be. You know, so it's synergistic toxicity between these elements in the vaccine and the glyphosate, which is all over the place in the food, the water, the air.
Okay, got it. Now, I want to ask you about another ingredient, and that is hydrochloric acid. And you see that hydrochloric acid gets called out a lot as a bad ingredient in vaccines. But it seems that the body should be able to neutralize that pretty easily. I mean, we've got hydrochloric acid in our guts, for example. I know the gut is different than the bloodstream, but is hydrochloric acid an issue? Because that's another one that I see kind of called out as a dangerous ingredient in vaccines.
That's interesting because I have missed that one and I haven't studied it, but I can guess that it would be. And the reason is actually, again, because of the disruption. I mean, glyphosate is a train wreck for the body and is causing a lot of dysbiosis. And hydrochloric acid can become hypochlorite. Hypochlorite is something that the immune system uses to kill bugs. You know, it's basically Clorox, you know. The body actually produces hypochlorite under an immune attack. So when you've got when your immune cells are busy fighting bugs, they're going to release hypochlorite. And so if there's hydrochloric acid being released by the vaccine, it could actually be a signal, a confusing signal to the body to make the body think that there's an immune reaction, that there's an attack by bugs. And maybe that's why it's there. Now, I have, as I said, I'm going out on a limb here because I haven't studied. I'll go back and study it as soon as I get off the phone here. But it might be that they've observed that if they put that in there, they get a better response. And that would be because of its a false signal, you know. Mm. You basically like to fool the body. That's what the vaccines are about. And the aluminum also increases. The reason why they put aluminum in is because it increases the immune system. It increases the take. You know, it increases the likelihood that you will actually develop these antibodies that you need to develop in order to gain the immunity that the vaccine's supposed to give you. So the other problem you can have is that you got the vaccine, but it didn't actually prevent you from getting the disease. And we're seeing that now. We're seeing people getting, you know, measles and whatnot who have been fully vaccinated, you know. Mm. This is a problem we're facing right now. And actually getting all these diseases when you're much older, measles, for example, turns into a really toxic disease if you get it when you're older. as a child, it's much, much easier for you to cope with it.
Yeah, so and this is a completely different approach, too, because the idea typically is that if enough people are vaccinated against the disease, then the disease has trouble spreading, right?
It's like herd immunity.
But you're saying is that's a bad idea to not allow the disease to spread, because in doing so, we are setting ourselves up for different diseases later on in life that are going to be more damaging to us than these other things like measles, mumps, and rubella would have been when we were young?
Yeah, I mean, basically, there's a lot of microbes out there, and new ones can always come in to replace the ones that are being immunized against. And chances are the new ones are going to be worse than the ones that you're not getting, you know? So you're basically, you've got the more popular ones that have been giving us diseases that have been helping us to redistribute our sulfate, for example. And now we can't get those anymore, so we start to get a huge problem with sulfate deficiency, and then we become very vulnerable to some other bug that's going to overgrow in our body and possibly be much more toxic than the one that we have protected ourselves against. And that's like the syncytial versus the flu virus. And, of course, this year, I mean, I think it's ironic that we've been pushing this flu vaccine so hard for so many years, and here we are with an epidemic. You would think that we would, by this point, with everybody getting a flu shot every year, that we would have been massively immunized against the flu. You would think it would have disappeared. You know, it's clearly not happening. I mean, the vaccine is actually working against us and making the flu more vicious. We're getting more people in the hospital with the flu. I mean, everything is working the wrong way. And it's ironic to me. They keep on saying, get your flu vaccine, you idiot, you know. And I just find that very amusing. The way you avoid the flu is, I mean, the way I've avoided it is by staying healthy. You eat organic food. You get a lot of sunlight exposure to the skin to assure a sufficient sulfate supply. You eat sulfur-containing foods. You won't get the flu. I'm not worried about the flu at all.
So you use a lot of sulfur-containing foods. You use sulfur type of supplements as well. I mean, there are things like glutathione, for example.
Glutathione, glucosamine sulfate, chondroitin sulfate, methyl sulfonylmethane, L-lipoic acid. There's a bunch of things that contain sulfur. I don't take any of them because I don't take supplements, but I would if I were sick. If I were diagnosed with cancer, the first thing I would do is start gulping these things, you know? Yeah. Because I believe that sulfur deficiency, and in particular sulfate deficiency, sulfate is sulfur plus four oxygens plus two negative charge, SO4 minus two, an extremely important molecule in the body, very, very difficult to transport and very, very essential to the health of the blood.
Now,
this is a key thing I've identified as a dysfunction in modern society that's behind many of the modern diseases.
Before asking you about some of the potential alternatives to vaccines and some of the things you might recommend people listening in do, I have a question about another ingredient, and that's formaldehyde. That's another one,
yes,
along with like the hydrochloric acid and the mercury and stuff that I've seen mentioned a lot. Now I personally used to work with formaldehyde a lot, nasty, stinky stuff when I was an anatomy TA and used to dissect the bodies in anatomy lab, and still have a little bit of a gag reflex with that smell, that strong smell of formaldehyde. But at the same time, I do know that the body makes a little bit of its own formaldehyde, and I'm wondering like how damaging formaldehyde is and what the deal is with formaldehyde in vaccines. Can you explain?
Yeah, I mean, formaldehyde is also toxic and also problematic. And again, because it's being delivered directly to the system rather than going through the gut. And the gut, it is produced in the gut. In fact, it's produced by bacteria in response to glyphosate in the gut, which is very interesting to me. So I think that there's more formaldehyde being produced in the gut, people who are exposed to glyphosate in their food. And formaldehyde is toxic, and it will actually cause a whole, it's part of the whole contributing. There's a bunch of things that will contribute to this encephalopathy that you get, you know, sort of a, it can end up with seizures. You have this brain reaction that can really mess up your brain and end up with autism after you're all done. This happens, you know, sort of anaphylactic shock that happens in response sometimes to vaccines, very rarely. And it's basically the brain on fire, you know. And formaldehyde, hypochlorite, glutamate, there's other things too. Ammonia. Ammonia is another one. So all of those will contribute, and also hypoxia, which basically means insufficient oxygen, and also insufficient glucose. So all of these factors, you know, will work towards triggering this anaphylactic shock or this or an encephalitis, you know, encephalopathy, which is a swelled brain. You get water retention in the brain, and you get vicious headaches, and it can end up with seizures, you know, and high fever. I mean, all of these things are connected to this encephalopathy, which is a sort of an immune reaction to this complex of different chemicals that are showing up in your brain and triggering this response that can end up doing a lot of damage to the brain that you can't recover from. Sometimes you just recover fine, but sometimes you don't, you know?
Interesting. So again, it's the difference between having it in the bloodstream versus in the gut.
Yeah, in the gut. I mean, if you're, of course, leaky gut is a huge problem, and also gut dysbiosis.
I guess we're assuming here that people, like in the presence of a healthy gut, you would be able to do it. But then, of course, we have all the other issues with kids not getting, well, you know, for example, I know a big one is kids don't get breast milk, and so the leaky junctions in their gut stay open. So kids have leaky gut, and then adults can get it from you know, antibiotics and commercial milk and, you know, everything
else. Absolutely. And antibiotics, I'm glad you brought that up, of course, because, of course, there's antibiotics. You know that the animals are fed antibiotics, the cows, so it can be in the meat that you eat. Mm-hmm. But also, glyphosate is patented as an antibiotic. It's patented as an antimicrobial agent. Mm-hmm. It kills most microbes, preferentially kills the good bacteria and allows the pathogens to overgrow. So I think that this massive problem we're having today with gut issues, you know, we've got celiac disease, inflammatory bowel disease, leaky gut, you know, all these things, acid reflux are, I think glyphosate is a major contributor to that.
Hmm. Now, what about these alternative vaccination schedules or kind of like spreading out vaccines over a longer period of time, doing things like that? And the reason I ask this question is not necessarily because you haven't done some good convincing that vaccines in the first place are probably something that we might want to reconsider, but because a lot of people are either under pressure or, you know, the schools that their kids are going to are giving them a hard time as far as vaccinations go. I mean, like, do you mitigate any of the damage by, say, spreading things out over a really long period of time? Like, I know Dr. Sears, for example, has his alternative vaccination schedule where you're going for a longer period of time or skipping certain vaccines. I mean, what are some of the best practices here if someone were, say, still going to get a vaccination or still going to have their children get one?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that if you know, because it's hard for people to suddenly decide that vaccines are, that it's fine if I don't vaccinate my child. We're so conditioned to believe that they have to, that's part of growing up, that they have to have these vaccines. People get very nervous about not doing it at all. Slowing it down is a marvelous thing to do, because getting it early is much more treacherous than getting it late. And also, in early life, the immune system is not even developed yet, so often it's wasted. I think the hepatitis B at birth is an insane idea. And I would not support anybody getting hepatitis B at birth, which is required in the United States. Hepatitis B contains a significant amount of aluminum. And I just can't imagine anything worse than a child being born and the first thing they get is a dose of aluminum in their blood. I think it's crazy. And it's not even a risk, you know. I mean, hepatitis B is something that, it's a genetic, you know, it's a sexually transmitted disease. I mean, the kid's not going to have a problem with it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so it's and stupid.
If someone is say working in a hospital later on in life where they're going to be, say, exposed to hepatitis B, is it then a time that you would want to consider getting a vaccination, or are you saying don't get it, period?
At this point in my life, I have become so negative about vaccines that it's hard for me to imagine that any of them are useful. But I do think that may be too extreme a position to take. It's certainly in the modern world. I mean, I'm hoping that what I'm picturing will happen in the future is that more and more people will delay the vaccines, more and more people will decide not to get certain vaccines, and we'll get some of these diseases coming back, and then people will panic and start. I mean, we'll have a sort of back and forth period. But on average, we'll move towards less vaccination over time because we'll see the harm being done. I mean, there's also all these other, not just the autism, but ADHD and allergies, asthma, you know, all these skin conditions, eczema, all these problems that kids are having today that they didn't have in the past. You know, when I was a child, I didn't know anybody with these problems, any of them, and certainly including some ADHD, none of them.
And are you really convinced that that's because of the glyphosate exposure, GMOs, and vaccines versus, say, like us just being more aware that they exist?
I'm absolutely convinced that it is a real problem. Absolutely.
I mean, to a certain extent, I think with something like ADD, you know, it's like, you know, like I'm looking at my office window right now, and I've got 2 6-year-old boys standing out in the snow, and they're running around throwing logs at each other. Literally, like, logs about half the size of their bodies. And it's like, you know, if my kids were in some settings, they would probably be diagnosed with ADD. And I don't necessarily think it's because my kids have been exposed to like glyphosate or something like that. But in an era where we're able to diagnose things like that, do you think that diagnoses are partially going up just because of awareness and the fact that ADD now exists?
I think that actually diagnosis is going down. I think that it's worse than what we're diagnosing because we're under pressure in the school system to save money. And every time you diagnose a child with, for example, autism, it's going to be a huge budget increase in the school system. And budgets are breaking, you know. You can't educate the mainstream because you've got so many kids that are sick that you're dumping all the money into. You're going to be on a poverty budget in the school system. This is what's going to happen shortly because the autism rate is going to continue to go up exponentially. There's going to be a break point beyond which we simply can't cope anymore. And we need to make drastic changes right now, and I would say two things. One is to reduce the vaccines, and as you say, slow down the schedule, but I would say eliminate any that you think are not as useful as the others, you know? And, of course, for me, I would say get rid of the MMR and the measles, you know, mumps, rubella, because when I was a kid, we didn't get those. We caught the diseases, and it was fine, you know? I remember getting the measles. It was wonderful. I had a two-week vacation from school, and I was hardly sick at all. You know, we need to recognize that kids need to get these diseases. In order to have a healthy immune system, that's how you make your immune system healthy. What we're doing is making the immune system sick by going the exact opposite direction, not allowing them to get these usually harmless childhood diseases. The few people who die are kids who are very sick to begin with. You know, it's sort of a weeding out process. It's cruel maybe to say that, but kids are dying from vaccines as well, so it's not like you're preventing death.
So I guess I've got one other kind of thought experiment question for you. Let's say that you had a baby today or you were given a baby to take care of. I think I could pretty safely say that you would not be vaccinating them, but would you do anything? Like, would you like use, I mean, there are all sorts of things out there, right? Like homeopaths and essential oils and all these type of things. Or do you just like give them real food and let them get sick and come what may?
Yeah, I mean, as I told you, I don't take supplements. I take only one supplement, which is not oral. I soak in Epsom salt baths. I really believe in sulfate, as I told you, as the key problem. Epsom salts are terrific.
I use magnesium sulfate.
Yeah, it's the same thing. Yeah, magnesium sulfate is Epsom salts. Of course, sulfur hot springs is even better. When I'm in Taiwan, I frequent the sulfur hot springs there, which are great, you know. You can get sulfate soaked up through your skin, and then that's a really easy way to get it delivered to your body because it's difficult to transport sulfate starting with a gut. And there's all these sulfate transporters that are derailed by glyphosate, so it's really a mess for sulfate. Sulfate also, vitamin D, for example, vitamin D deficiency causes sulfate flushing out of the kidneys, and glyphosate induces vitamin D deficiency by disrupting the enzyme in the liver that activates vitamin D. So I think that's why we have a vitamin D deficiency epidemic today, and that's going to correspond to a sulfate deficiency epidemic, which, of course, no one's noticing because people are not studying it. I mean, there's very few people who are studying sulfate.
Just one more time, really quickly, because I know some people might have a difficult time wrapping their heads around this. Can you explain that link between sulfate and vitamin D deficiency one more time?
Yes. So vitamin D in the kidney, vitamin D signals the kidney not to throw sulfate out through the urine. So if there isn't enough vitamin D, the kidney will throw sulfate out through the urine. It'll just get rid of it, and that'll result in a sulfate deficiency problem. And vitamin D, it needs to be activated. It gets activated, actually, it's very interesting because it's produced in the skin in response to sunlight. It's activated in the liver in a step one, and then it's activated more in the kidney in a step two. Both of those enzymes that activated are cytochrome P450 enzymes, which have been shown to be disrupted by glyphosate in rat studies. So glyphosate is inhibiting the enzymes that activate the vitamin D, which is, if you look at the CDC's hospital discharge data, huge increase in vitamin D deficiency, really just since 2005. It's just skyrocketing, vitamin D deficiency. And everyone's saying, oh, yeah, everyone's taking vitamin D pills now, you know, because they're aware of this deficiency problem. And again, we don't seem to, you know, we just keep defining the new normal, you know, like, oh, yeah, I'm allergic to wheat. Oh, yeah, I'm allergic to wheat, too. I mean, everyone's allergic to wheat. That's like, okay, that's fine. You know, why don't we think that's weird? And then, oh, I've got vitamin D deficiency. Oh, yeah, so do I. I mean, you know, everyone is allergic to wheat. Everyone's got vitamin D deficiency. And people aren't questioning, what is it in the environment that's causing these problems? And I say the answer is glyphosate, the active ingredient in Roundup.
Interesting. So sulfur deficiencies and elimination of glyphosate would be the two big things to address.
Absolutely. Get rid of the glyphosate, eat lots of garlic. Also eat foods that have colorful vegetables and fruits because they have polyphenols, which help to transport the sulfate, and also eating a lot of cholesterol-containing foods because cholesterol helps transport the sulfate, and getting out in the sunlight because then you can produce, and we have a paper that talks about synthesizing sulfate in the skin in response to sunlight, which is why I worship the sun. You know, taking a vitamin D pill is not going to give you the sulfate, but sitting out in the sun, you'll get both the vitamin D and the sulfate. And the sulfate is the more important thing that you're getting through sunlight exposure, not the vitamin D.
Yeah.
Which is why all the experiments have failed. You know, they recognize that places that have a lot of sun, they have a lot less health issues, lower cancer rates, I mean, all kinds of things. MS are beneficial, lower rates in sunny places. And then they translate that immediately into, oh, yeah, take your vitamin D pill. That does not work, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I try it's and just get cumulative vitamin D. Like right now, you and I are recording this interview, and you know, I'll have about a 5 to 10 minute break before my next appointment, and I will literally open the door to my office, walk outside, and not only stand out in the sun, but just do other little things that help to mitigate the effects of being indoors all day. Like I'll focus my eyes off in the distance, off in the horizon, because I've been staring at a computer screen two feet from my head.
And
swing my arms around and get some blood flowing, get some fresh air, get all those, you know, what they call negative ions. I mean, like, you know, there are all sorts of things.
Grounding,
that we,
right?
We
walking barefoot.
Indoors. Yeah, exactly. So,
and right now I'm outside. I'm here in Hawaii. Yeah. It's a beautiful sunny day. I'm outside. Can you hear the birds chirping? I've got a bird feeder. I've beside me lots of birds. It's wonderful. And I've got a wonderful, I'm soaking up the sun. I mean, I don't think you can get enough sun exposure.
Yeah.
It's what will give you health. That's why I don't get the flu, you know?
Yeah.
It will be healthy.
Wow.
And it's free, you know? It's free.
Well, I could talk to you forever, Stephanie, but and it sounds like there's all sorts of different segues that we could get on. But this information that you've given on vaccines today is really helpful. And if you're listening in right now, you can go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/vaccines. That's bengreenfieldfitness.com/vaccines. I'll put a link to Stephanie's research page. I'll also put a link to that book by Suzanne Humphreys that she talked about, as well as a list of foods that contain glyphosate, the VARS database that we discussed, and any other helpful links for you. And then if you have thoughts, comments, feedback, again, I know this is a controversial topic, but I'm all about discussion. So just leave a comment on the show notes over there at bengreenfieldfitness.com/vaccines if you have your own thoughts to add. So Stephanie, thanks so much for your time today and for coming on the call.
Thank you. It was delightful.
All right, folks, this is Ben Greenfield and Stephanie Seneff signing out from bengreenfieldfitness.com.
Visit bengreenfieldfitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness, nutrition, and performance advice.